The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Is Hunter Biden a national security threat?
That's not a question that would come up before me, Congressman.
You're the head of the National Security Division, so it seems sort of on the nose.
It's not in my practice or experience to identify individuals.
Not in my purview.
And to
We've
label
heard that
any individual, an American citizen, or any individual as a national security threat.
Well, you would certainly concede that if the adult offspring of the President of the United States or the Vice President were compromised, that would be a national security threat, right?
We speak through our filings in court.
Speak to this. Where's the laptop?
In that position.
Do you know where Hunter Biden's laptop is?
Again, I'm not going to talk about any potential ongoing investigation as I sit here.
Do you know where it is?
I'm not going to talk about any ongoing investigation.
You come here and you tell us you follow the facts and the law, but you can't even follow a laptop that you guys have had for 3 years. But you know who is speaking about it? The whistleblowers from the FBI who've gone to Senator Grassley and said that you guys purposefully take any information that is derogatory about Hunter Biden, and you go and rat hole it so that you never have to speak about it in any circumstance. Do you guys call Joe Biden the big guy at the Department of Justice?
So I think it's important to understand why we don't speak about cases outside of the courtroom.
But you guys have no problem leaking about other stuff, right? Like, you got no problem going out and tagging parents at school board meetings as a national security threat. But when all of the facts and all of the law are before you regarding the corruption of Hunter Biden, you don't want to speak to that at all. And it's precisely why you've got folks that are talking to Senator Grassley about it.
There's Congressman Gates grilling this head of National Security Division at the FBI. Is there a greater threat to America's national security than the nation's own Federal Bureau of Investigations? I mean, this is an organization that we've learned this week, and leave aside the noise coming from the legacy media, that this is somehow a great week for Joe Biden. He conquered COVID. He got Manchin to swing over to Schumer's side. What a week, they're saying. Can you believe this? Even as the FBI has been exposed as an enemy of the state. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. It's hard to believe we're at the last day of the work week. Friday is upon us. We're coming into, well, first let me just say, you can get to our live video stream of this show on our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live and you can get to the live stream, or you can watch the podcasts that are posted after the fact. As I say, we're at the end of the work week. We're coming into the final weekend of our summer educational program. That, too, is hard to believe. You've had a few of our fine substitutes filling in for me. Richard Palmer on the show yesterday. We appreciate his efforts, and Sam before him. But yes, the summer educational program is coming to an end on Sunday night. Some sad times, I'm sure, for a lot of these teenagers. Some of us older folks will be looking forward to bouncing back from it. It has been a little bit tiring and also very warm up until just yesterday, just coming back from the camp out down in the Wichita Mountains with the gals this time. I went with the guys earlier in the week, but yes, driving into a massive Oklahoma thunderstorm this morning. It was actually, usually that's nerve-wracking. It was actually kind of enjoyable this morning just because it has been so dry and it's been so hot. The temperatures today, they're 85 degrees, and the grass, I'm sure, is benefiting from the fields that we have for all the activities, is benefiting from the rain. And I'm sure the campers will appreciate it on Sunday morning when we have our annual track meet, the end of the summer educational program activity, the big activity with all of the campers competing against one another and dorm against dorm with respect to all those track and field activities. So that's Sunday morning. We've got the award show Sunday night. And, of course, We've got a Sabbath coming up here real soon as well that I'm sure all of the campers will enjoy the extra time for rest and refreshment. So there, as I say, there's this higher up at the FBI there to answer basically nothing. He can't say anything about Joe Biden. Can't say if Hunter Biden is compromised. Here they were selling favors to America's enemies, and it's made clear on the laptop, the Biden crime family laptop. And the FBI, we learned from whistleblowers this week through Senator Grassley's office, as you heard there from Matt Gaetz. We've heard that the FBI, you know, before it was the media. The media was covering it up. Big tech. I mean, you talk about threats to national security. You've got to throw them in there as well. The legacy media, big tech that just blotted out and censored anyone, even canceling the New York Post's Twitter page for a time. Because they just wouldn't have it. You could not say anything about Hunter Biden or the laptop, the Biden crime family laptop. Couldn't say it. Certainly not in the lead up to the election, because they had to get Joe Biden installed as president. Barack Obama wouldn't have it any other way. So they covered all of that up. But now we know that the FBI was out front, leading the disinformation campaign. Getting all of these former intelligence officials to get on board with this document saying this is classic Russian disinformation. The laptop actually is from Russia. It's Vladimir Putin is behind the laptop. Doesn't even belong to Hunter Biden. Can you believe that they actually tried to get you to believe this? It's not Hunter Biden's laptop. This is from Breitbart. It says, President Joe Biden, and again, leave aside all the child pornography and just the rank perversion on that laptop. That's disgusting in and of itself. But selling influence, selling favors to America's enemies, this is treason. The son of, now the president, an illegitimate one at that, the son of the president of the United States compromised by America's enemies. How much of this, by the way, did Barack Obama just say, hey, just leave it out there, because this is a great way to ensure that Joe Biden, as the puppet, does exactly what I tell him to do. Now, that's not to suggest that Obama wasn't involved in a lot of this compromised dealings with America's enemies. He made it clear from the very beginning of his first term that he was going to fundamentally transform the United States. And he went on world tour, basically bowing before the enemies of America and then stabbing America's friends in the back. That went on for 8 years. Now we're in the third term of Barack Obama. Breitbart says, President Joe Biden was involved in his son Hunter Biden's business dealings at least 17 times over 10 years, records from Hunter's laptop and reports show. And you remember Biden during the campaign, on and on about, I know nothing about my son's business dealings. And then, of course, Bobulinski and others coming forward saying, he's the big guy. He was getting a cut. He was getting his 10% cut. And the media, and we now know the FBI, just covering all of that up. Breitbart says, though Joe Biden and his staff have claimed at least 7 times that the president has not been involved in the family business, 17 pieces of evidence suggest Joe Biden has played an influential role in his son Hunter and brother James's activities. 58% of voters believe that Joe Biden has played a role in the family's business. 60% say Hunter Biden has sold influence and access to the president. In other words, a large majority of Americans believe they're corrupt, believe they were selling influence, and the FBI covered it up. And you, it's hard to find any coverage of this story at all. Tucker had a segment on it, a few conservative voices, obviously. You've got Matt Gaetz, who's holding this guy's feet to the fire. But they're in the minority at Congress. And, you know, you go to the New York Times. The New York Times and the Washington Post want for you to know that, hey, Merrick Garland, he's investigating Trump. Investigating Trump? And not this? Another piece at Breitbart says, Hunter Biden's business partner, James Gillier, who dubbed President Joe Biden the big guy in a 2017 email, called Joe Biden the big guy again in a text conversation the day that the laptop series began publishing at the New York Post in 2020. So Gillier, it's more than just once. It's more than that Bob Alinsky email that we were made aware of. He said it in 2020. Referred to him as the big guy. You would think the legacy media would show a little interest in this kind of treasonous behavior. It says here, Gillier, a former British Special Forces officer and past business partner with the Biden family, received a panicked message from an unnamed person on October 14th, 2020. This was just weeks before the stolen election. It says about Joe Biden's involvement in the family business on the same day that the Post began breaking the Hunter Biden laptop series. They thought, hey, we could be in trouble here. And what about the big guy? The big guy being Joe Biden. It's really, as I've said, it's really the Joe Biden laptop. And it exposes him as a treasonous agent, a compromised agent, right at the top of American government. Lee Smith, he had a piece, again, putting some of this scandalous activity into a historical perspective. He says here, when Trump started asking questions in 2019 about Hunter and his father, prompted by Joe Biden's public comments about protecting Hunter's business associates abroad, it became clear that the only way to contain the mushrooming scandal involving key U.S. interests in Ukraine and China, a scandal whose magnitude they had known about for a decade, went all the way back to the Obama years. It says the only way to contain this mushrooming scandal was to provide the former vice president with all the resources the U.S. government could muster, including the FBI, the DOJ. Hey, we got to cover all of this up. And as I say, Obama, he obviously wants to finish his agenda, fundamentally transforming the United States. But the other angle to this, of course, is that a lot of this third term, and we saw this with the Mueller investigation, you know, it was supposedly seeking after this truth or that truth, when in fact, a lot of it was meant to cover up lawlessness. And Obama knew, once Trump got in there, he knew Trump and Flynn and others were going to expose his corruption. And so he's the one that was behind the bogus intelligence report saying Russia enabled Trump to steal the election. They were all for a stolen election narrative, as long as you're referring to 2016. Obama was hard at work to cover up his lawlessness. And so he targeted Flynn. And so he kept Donald Trump constantly under investigation, harassed by leakers, nonstop leakers. And they're going on and on even this week. Merrick Garland might throw down an indictment of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, of all things. Even as all this is transpiring, even as we're learning all of this about Hunter, the Bidens, Obama, the FBI. Smith, in this piece that he wrote, interviews this guy named Jack Maxey. He obtained a copy of the Biden laptop, the hard drive. He took it over to Switzerland, a specialist there, that he thought could recover some of the files that had been deleted. There's even more lawlessness revealed in this lap. The more we learn about it, the worse it gets. And yet the Washington Post, the New York Times, where are they? It was around the time that Maxey was doing his work to expose even more that the New York Times, by the way, came out and did admit, well, it is Hunter's. See, they won't report the truth unless they absolutely have to, unless they're about to be exposed as the frauds that we all know that they are. Then they'll finally come around. Okay, 18 months later, yes, it's Hunter's. We'll admit it was Hunter's. Smith writes, Maxey says he also saw information on the laptop that has direct implications for U.S. national security. According to Maxey, this material includes documents relating to Pentagon cyber programs and others regarding former FBI Director Louis Freeh. According to a previously released email on Hunter's laptop, Freeh worked with him to help a Romanian tycoon evade bribery charges. In April 2016, according to an earlier trove of emails, Freeh deposited $100,000 in a trust fund for two of Joe Biden's grandchildren. Now, Freeh has all these connections to Bill Clinton. He was Clinton's FBI director. I mean, the swamp is very swampy, isn't it? And what did Donald Trump say all through 2015 and 16? We need to drain the swamp. We need to expose these people. And he's done that. And the exposure continues. And you've got a few voices like Matt Gaetz, who has the courage to speak up and to say something. Smith writes here, the Treasury Department has rebuffed requests from Republican lawmakers to release suspicious activity reports related to Hunter Biden that might shed more light on the foreign entanglements outlined in the laptop's information and his father's possible involvement. So you've got the DOJ, the FBI, here it says the Treasury Department, they've rebuffed requests from Republicans. You just can't get to the information. They're all in on the cover-up. They're all engaged in treason. And they don't want to be exposed. That's why Donald Trump is public enemy number one. That's why he's the one that the media won't stop railing on. They're all in on it. All of these attacks on Trump are driven by these agencies that are just trying to protect themselves from being exposed. They're all in on the cover-up. Smith notes how that the FBI knew all about Hunter's business dealings for years. They knew about it going back to the first and second term of Obama, back when Joe Biden was vice president. The family, the Biden family, just raking in millions and millions and millions, even as they sold favors to America's enemies. Wow. What a story. What a story. What a bombshell. Listen to Matt Gaetz as he talks about the obvious corruption and cover-up at the FBI, at America's so-called Department of Justice. This is clip 10.
There is a secret workspace at the Perkins law firm that is maintained by the Department of Justice. Has any information flowed through that secret workspace to the National Security Division?
I'm not familiar with the premise of your question. Potential investigation.
Do you think the American people deserve to know whether or not the first family is compromised?
We speak through our filings in court at the Justice Department. We do not make allegations without going to court.
Because yesterday you all spoke through some leaks, right? I mean, when it's the Biden family, you all are all buttoned up with all of your propriety about not talking about these things. But when it's a Republican, when it's President Trump, you all love to go have your authorized leaks.
We speak through our filings in court. That's part of the rule of law. It's designed to protect the rights of anyone who may be accused. And it's designed to protect the integrity of the investigation. It's a central pillar of the Justice Department.
Well, it's one you violate all the time. I mean, even Mr. Horowitz, the Obama-appointed inspector general, has given us report after report of where Department of Justice employees are off getting tickets to baseball games and fancy dinners with the reporters in exchange for giving them information. So can you at least acknowledge that you don't live up to that pillar with great precision?
We speak through what we say in court.
I mean, look, this is what Mr. Grassley said. If these allegations are true and accurate, the Justice Department and FBI are and have been institutionally corrupted to their very core, to the point at which the United States Congress and the American people will have no confidence in the equal application of the law. Can't you see that's what your behavior is continuing to just metastasize?
So we don't conduct our investigations in public.
And yeah, you leak them. That's what you do.
And we take
you leak them to try to smear people.
He says nothing, basically. He continues with the cover-up. Institutionally corrupted. Who could have ever imagined that the FBI would turn into an agency like this and that they'd be provided cover by the legacy media, the propaganda media? It used to be that the media would go after these government agencies and hold their feet to the fire. Now it's just a few voices like Matt Gaetz. I'll just refer you to a couple of Trumpet articles. The Biden corruption reveal. This is from October of 2020, just a few weeks before the election, before the Obama people completed the steal of the 2020 presidential election. You had the New York Post, maybe Breitbart, Tucker sat down with Bob Alinsky. This was all right before the election. And of course, the Trumpet was there too, reporting the truth. We wrote, Joe Biden has repeatedly lied about his son's business dealings. President Trump reacted to the Hunter Biden scandal at a campaign event in Iowa, saying, Joe Biden has been blatantly lying about his involvement in his son's corrupt business dealings, and this is a big smoking gun. That's quoting Donald Trump in 2020. You look back on some of these Trump quotes, and I mean, he was spot on. So, as I say, you've got Tucker, you've got the New York Post, and you've got Donald Trump. And everyone, then and today, painting Trump as if he's this wild-eyed fanatic. And the Trumpet wrote this in response to that quote from Donald Trump. We said, he's right. This was a massive pay-for-play operation. Every day, we learn more and more about the previous administration's abuse of power, about Obama officials who put personal and political gain ahead of good policy for the American people. Every day, we're learning more about that. This was from a Trumpet article 2 years ago. We quoted Trump again. He said, they're addicted to power, and God help us if they get it. We'll never be the same country, and we will never be able to recover. That's quoting Donald Trump in October of 2020. Here again, spot on. Spot on. Look at what's happened to the country. After they got control of Congress, they got control of the White House, they completed the steal, and then, of course, they've been engaged in covering that up as well. Everything is about covering up the steal. All of this January 6th persecution of Trump supporters. This is from America Under Attack, I believe, my father's booklet. That'll be out hopefully here next week. We'll see. It says, when Donald Trump was presidential candidate in 2016, radical leftists targeted him, ridiculed him for saying the election could be rigged, and did all that they could with the collusion of a biased media to portray him as unfit for office. But they did much more. They committed serious crimes. It says the extent of their lawless activity took time to be uncovered, and surely some of it has yet to be fully exposed. This was from, I think, the original America Under Attack. In any event, look at what we're seeing now. Hindsight, of course, gives us the benefit of seeing these things even more clearly than ever before. But you get a little bit further on into this story. You get to a point where you think it can't possibly get any worse than what it is right now. And then we learn this week that the FBI was spearheading the disinformation campaign. They're supposed to be there helping the good guy and going after the bad guy, as you heard earlier this week with one of those clips we played. It's just the opposite. They're targeting lawless Americans. Sorry, the law-abiding Americans. And they're protecting the criminals. And then now, As we understand from this week's revelations, they're chief propagandists as well. Are those intelligence officers that signed that document saying it was Russian disinformation, are they going to be penalized for that? Or just, you know, dust their hands off and carry on? Well, when we come back, we'll focus a little bit more on the media and what they're really excited about this week, this great week for Joe Biden. Even as we come into a recession, we now know after two quarters of the American economy shrinking, we know we're in the midst of a recession. But don't count on the media holding Joe Biden to account on that front. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
When you look at the economy, how he was able to turn it back on when he walked in.
What we're seeing is that we are in a transition. We had this strong economic growth because of the work that this president has done in the past 18 months. And now what we're seeing is a transition into stable and steady growth.
These same people that oftentimes say a man is actually a woman are now out there saying a recession is actually a transition into a great economy, a wonderful economy. It couldn't be better. The Joe Bama people are out there in overdrive. They're in full George Orwell's 1984 mode to tell you what's up is down, what's black is white, what's recession is actually a wonderful economic spurt of growth. That's the White House press secretary there. Listen to Joe Biden's, one of his economic advisors, Brian Deese, clip 5.
We don't want to devolve into the recession label debate, but I do wonder, do you eventually expect the NBER to declare what we're in, a recession?
Well, we're certainly in a transition, and we are seeing slowing as we all would have expected. But I think if you look at the full data and the type of data that NBER looks at, virtually nothing signals that this period in the second quarter is recessionary.
Even Jake Tapper, again, I'll get to some of the others in the media, and they're hyperventilating over over other news that they see as really positive for this administration. But Jake Tapper wasn't buying it. This talk about saying the recession is not actually a recession. This is clip 6.
Generally, traditionally, a recession is understood to be two successive quarters of negative economic growth, and that is what we're in. I understand that you will tell me that that's not the official definition, but doesn't this semantic debate risk making the White House seem as if you're in denial and out of touch with Americans who are really struggling out there.
Not at all, Jake.
But it's been two quarters in a row of negative GDP growth. I mean, that is an ugly fact. And traditionally, that has been the colloquial way a recession has been defined, two successive quarters of negative GDP growth.
And so this was all confirmed yesterday, two successive quarters of America's economy shrinking. This is from agency France Presse. It says Biden is suddenly, here again, we've talked about them throwing Biden under the bus. I mean, the news was just so negative and dreadful week in and week out. I think it was Van Jones yesterday who said if you take away the past 6 months, Biden's actually having a pretty effective presidency. The past 6 months. AFP says here, Biden is suddenly winning. Just don't say the R word. Just leave recession out of the discussion, and suddenly there's victories. Victory is in the air for Joe Biden. Overcoming COVID and outfoxing the Republicans, Joe Biden is having an unusually good week, and he won't let Thursday's recession talk spoil his mood. It's just talk about a recession. See, they've come in, they've changed the definition. And I won't take the time to show you all the video clips surfacing on social media of Nancy Pelosi in 2008, Bill Clinton back in the 1990s. Everyone, every Democrat saying, if it's two quarters, if it's negative in two quarters, that's a recession. We're in the midst of a recession. And yet, look at how excited the media suddenly get. AFP says, when the 79-year-old tested positive for the coronavirus last week, it seemed nature had decided to pile in on his already daunting list of man-made woes. Highest inflation in four decades, lowest polls of his presidency, and a tiny Democratic congressional majority, apparently unable to get anything done. Fast forward to Wednesday, and Biden, declared COVID-free by his doctor, emerged from the White House residence to cheers from staff in the Rose Garden. The sun was shining literally and politically. Now I get to go back to the Oval Office, he said to applause, sounding as if he were opening a birthday present. There were reasons for the spring in Biden's step, well beyond the beneficial effects of the five-day course of the therapeutic Paxlovid that helped him through the COVID. Everybody's got to mention the Paxlovid because, Pfizer made it. Pfizer's profits. Play the exchange between, I think this is CNBC or one of the shows, and they're interviewing the CEO of Pfizer talking about the record profits that they've been pulling in.
This morning, Pfizer reported a magnificent quarter, just a monster earnings beat that you rarely expect from a big pharma company, thanks in large part to booming sales of their COVID vaccine and COVID treatment. Earlier today, we got the chance to speak to Dr. Albert Bourla, the chairman and CEO of Pfizer. Take a look. Albert, you had tremendous numbers today. Your COVID products obviously exceeding all expectations. Tell me what it's like to have the biggest beat in estimates that I know I've ever seen in my life, and how you accomplished it.
You know, even more rewarding for me is that we touched the lives of 850 million people approximately, which is 70% higher than last year. And that gave us this very big beat, because that's the beauty in our business. If you create value for patients, you are going to have value for the shareholders. This year, this quarter's earnings were the highest ever in the history of Pfizer in terms of revenues, and I believe the highest ever in the history of the industry.
So the nation's in the midst of a recession, officially. Most Americans are hurting because of this. It's not just a recession. It's a recession with out-of-control inflation. A lot of times in a recession, at least prices for things can go lower with a more depressed economy. But here, it's like a double whammy. The economy's shrinking and costs for everything, they're just skyrocketing. Nobody's really doing well except for Pfizer. Pfizer's having record profits. Pfizer has exceeded expectations. Big Pharma. It's not, usually this doesn't happen to Big Pharma, says the guy on CNBC who's generally wrong about everything. But on this, he's cheering right along with Bourla. Yes, Yes, it's the best time to be working at Pfizer. Oh, the shareholders are happy as well, because it's not even just the vaccine. Now they're on to Paxlovid. And Joe Biden even used Paxlovid. And everyone and their dog is mentioning that when they say he's recovered. Remember what happened? I played the difference between the two on last Friday's program, I think it was. But just compare. Remember what when Donald Trump came back to work? He was back. Didn't he leave to Walter Reed on Friday and then get back to the White House on Monday? And the whole the communists in the news media, all that they could focus on was he came back and he took off a mask. And that was the story. That was the narrative for the week. Biden's out for 5 days. He goes back to work. There's cheering, not just in the Rose Garden. The media, the legacy media, they're cheering. This is what a great week for Joe Biden. It says here, Democrats are suddenly on a roll. And Biden, even with approval ratings stuck below 40%, feels his constant optimism will be proved right. It says, as data came out showing the U.S. economy shrinking for a second successive quarter, his staff worked overtime to get the R word out of the conversation. It's all about the narrative. Even the FBI understands this. It's all about the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Look, we don't need to investigate. Cover Hunter's laptop. Just cover it up. Lead a disinformation campaign. Tell everybody the Russians are behind this. And then work in cahoots with big tech and have them blot out any story that even goes there. This happened weeks, days before the election. Was the election stolen? Look at the way these people operate. It's sickening. America's under attack, and it's coming from every angle, isn't it? Of course it is. The White House, Congress, the legacy media, big tech, and even, yes, even the FBI. Even these government agencies, thoroughly and completely weaponized during the first and second, we're in the third now. But going back to the first and second term of Barack Obama, I mean, he weaponized these agencies. And they use them, and they use them effectively to target their political opponents. Much has been made of Joe Manchin joining now with the radical Democrats to spend $700 billion as if this is going to help inflation. So this is what they're really giddy about this week. He conquered COVID thanks to Paxlovid. Pfizer's record profits off the charts. And then, you know, he's back to work. Everybody's cheering that. And then leave out the R word. Forget about recession. In fact, say it's not a recession. Why not? It's all about the narrative, right? And then, I mean, you can brag about Joe Manchin as well. And the fact that we get to spend $700 billion more dollars. How can they take this and turn it into a great week for Joe Biden when we're in the midst of a recession? Spend more money. Now we're winning. Inflation's out of control, and they're bragging about spending billions and almost $1 trillion. I forget what they named this. Basically, it's to reduce inflation, something like that, in the name for this bill. Everything is just the opposite, basically, of what it should read. Listen to this from the White House communication director, clip 4.
What role did President Biden play in this deal?
Well, remember, these are some of the core things that President Biden campaigned on in 2020. These are things that he promised to make progress on when he asked the American people for his vote. So he was incredibly gratified last night to see this breakthrough that Senator Manchin and Senator Schumer and so many others worked so hard on for many, many months. As you just laid out, it is a historic step forward in our fight to tackle the climate crisis. It will help us meet the president's carbon emission goal by 2030, which is absolutely critical as our planet is burning So it is enormously important, and it's also going to bring down costs. It's going to bring down healthcare costs, and it's going to reduce the deficit. So it's going to do all of this while ensuring that corporations are paying their fair share of taxes and that no one making under $400,000 a year sees a tax increase. So these were core promises that President Biden campaigned on in 2020.
He was in isolation until yesterday with COVID. I'm glad that he's out. Was he on the phone? Did he speak to Senator Manchin in the last week?
This is the work of many, many months. And I think everybody has seen this has been enormously hard work across the course of many, many months to get to this deal. So this is something that, again, the president is incredibly grateful to Senator Schumer and Senator Manchin and many others who put in hard work to do this. And, you know, this is exactly what the American people are asking for. This is the action that they want to see. And this deal that was announced last night represents an enormous, enormous step forward.
Has he spoken to Senator Manchin about this?
I don't have any private conversations to read out to you, except to say that obviously a tremendous amount of effort by a lot of parties has gone into getting here.
You see how happy both of them are. It's so exciting. We can finally confront global warming. This is what the American people want. They're excited to hear that we're spending $1 trillion more dollars on green energy, the Green New Deal. As to who was talking to Manchin, this is at the Daily Wire. Says here, former Treasury Secretary and Obama economic advisor Larry Summers defended Democrats' new economic package in a discussion with Senator Joe Manchin days before Manchin reversed course and agreed to the bill. So Manchin, he came under some pretty intense pressure from Obama. The Obama people, here they are again, just carrying on with their agenda. Never mind the bad news. Never mind the fact that we're in a recession. Just say that we're not. Never mind the cost for fuel, the cost for everything. Conservative Treehouse had a piece. I think it was Sundance himself. He got his electricity bill, and it was 28%. The rates had gone up 28%, just like that, for electricity. You know, the power that we need to plug in the EVs. Just carry on, though. Fundamentally transform the United States of America. We'll let you know when the book, America Under Attack, arrives from the printer. Should be happening in the next week or so. Very exciting times for God's work. And, as I said at the top, for God's young people, the teenagers in God's church, they are, after all, the future leaders of this world. Actually, I should say the coming new world. The wonderful world of tomorrow. In my father's booklet, The Key of David, he says we must continually remind our young people that they are God's princes and princesses of the earth. But they won't remain princes and princesses. They're to become God's kings of the universe. Says the most exalted calling in all eternity. And so he explains how that with our youth programs, we aim for an exalted and royal standard. And how that when we do this, it always, always, always comes back to God's royal law. It says here, Mr. Armstrong dedicated many resources to help the young people of God's church. He fully understood that young people and adults must be taught how to be God's royalty. I told you a little bit about the discussion we had after our etiquette dinner, the very first or second night of camp, I guess it was. And then I've been able to sit in on the fireside chats Monday night with all of the boys and then last night with all of the girls. And so inspiring to just hear from the young people themselves, 13, 14, 15 years of age, and really having some substantive comments on how camp has impacted them, what their goals are for after camp, how they want to come to Armstrong College, further their education, how they want to continue with the prayer and the study habits that they've gotten into more deeply here at the camp, the SEP program. In the Key of David booklet, my father says this, how do we learn? How do we all learn to be royalty? It says we learn to be royalty by fulfilling the royal law, which is the Ten Commandments. There should be no doubt in our minds about this fact. Jesus said, if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. It always comes back to commandment keeping. You look at the lawlessness in our world today, in the nation of America, for example. I got into this just a few days ago with you. How that the transgressors coming to the full, that's what opens the door to this Antiochus attack. It's because of widespread, rampant sin. And so when we turn it around, it always comes back to this royal law, obeying the Ten Commandments. It says here, all of our young people should be fully instructed in keeping the Ten Commandments. Just like adults, if our youth want to enter into eternal life and become God's royalty, they must keep the commandments. So you have the ministry in God's church out there working to set the right example, living the right way. Of course, out front, even ahead of that, is Jesus himself. Our example, our perfect example, 1 Peter 2:21. God says, follow in his steps. Notice James 2, speaking of this royal law. This is James 2 in verse 8. It says, if you fulfill the royal law, according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You do well. So if we fulfill this law, if we're learning to love our neighbor as ourselves, then we're going to do well. We're going to be prosperous. We're going to be successful. We're going to be happy and joyous. Verse 14, further on down, it says, these are verses, some of them that we're very familiar with. Verse 14 says, what does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and have not works, can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto him, depart in peace, be you warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what does it profit? What does it profit if you just say, hey, depart in peace, I hope everything goes well for you, I'm really pulling for you, but if you don't do something to help your neighbor, then what good is it? Verse 17, it says, even so, faith, if it has not works, is dead, being alone. And so in this chapter of the Bible, we see that there are two kinds of faith. There is the active, living, dynamic faith of those whose examples are mentioned in Hebrews 11, for example. I mentioned Jesus Christ, 1 Peter 2:21. These are examples of living faith. But you can also look into the Bible and see quite a few examples of dead faith. You know, people who just talk. They talk about God or they talk about faith, but they don't live it. That's a lot of what we see in the world today. Dead faith. Faith without works. Verse 21. It was nice music, but a little distracting. Verse 21, it says, was not Abraham our father justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? See you how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect? It says, and the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. See, he became the friend of God because he believed God. He acted on God's instructions. God said, I want you to go into this strange land. Take your family there. Just get up and go and follow me. Follow my instructions. And Abraham did it. He did it through his entire life. He waited on God for the son of promise. And then God said, now I want you to go and sacrifice your son. And he was willing to do it. Hebrews 11 says that his reasoning was that, well, God promised this son, and he promised that there'd just be these multitudes of people to come out from my family. So obviously God's going to have to, if he wants me to sacrifice my son, then God's going to have to raise him back to life. How about that for faith with works? I'm just going to do what God says and believe in faith that God will sort it out, that God will take care of it. He acted on the instructions of God and became God's friend in the process. And that's what, as I told the students or the campers earlier on in this summer educational program, that's what That's what God wants of them. He wants to be their friend. He wants to become their best friend. Notice John 15. John 15 and verse 13. This is Jesus speaking. It says, "Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." See, God has done that with us. God sacrificed his own son. Jesus Christ laid down his life for our campers, for you and me. It says here, "You are my friends," verse 14, "if you do whatsoever I command you." Here again, obedience to that royal law, faith with works. "Henceforth," verse 15, "I call you not servants, for the servant knows not what his Lord does, but I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you." See, it's just natural for young people. Mr. Armstrong brings this out in his book, The Missing Dimension in Sex. The pulls of human nature, they're so strong. And of course, this is evidence of the fact that Satan's the prince of the power of the air, all this evil wrought by human beings. But that pull of human nature is so strong. And the desire to want to belong, in this case, to want to belong to this world, and the people and the things of this world, our young people, all of us really, we're drawn to that. And God says, look, separate yourself from those influences and draw near to God and become a friend of God. It's natural to just go along with this world. I don't have enough time to go through some of the passages I have remaining here in my notes. But several Bible passages bring this out. So easy to just drift, to just go along. It's hard to stand alone with God. And of course, if you're with God, you're not alone. But it might feel that way. It might look that way. It might seem that way. But if you're with God, you're on the winning side. Here again, verse 23, it says, "And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." He was called God's friend. Moses was called this as well, Exodus 33 and verse 11. Notice verse 26. It says, "For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." See, James compares faith without works. He compares it to a corpse. What can you do with a body, a dead body? Nothing. You want to bury it as soon as you can before it begins to stink up the place, before rigor mortis sets in. And, well, yeah, you just want to get it in the coffin and out and into the ground. You can't do anything with it. There's no life there. Faith without works is dead. God compares it to a dead body. I don't have time to go through James chapter 4. Maybe we can just finish with this example, the verse that I've mentioned a couple of times. I'll read it to you. 1 Peter 2 and verse 21, it says, "For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us." He suffered for his friends. He loves his friends. "Leaving us an example that you should follow his steps." Follow his example. Follow in his footsteps. John 15, 14. I read it a moment ago. "You're my friends," said Jesus, if you do whatsoever I command you." See, we've got to follow the example that Jesus set for us. Enough with this religion about Jesus. Just talk about Jesus, even as we carry on with our lives, and we don't live the way he lived. This is true religion, what I'm talking to you about here from these verses. I'll have to carry on with this study next week, since we're out of time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.